She had never done anything like this before, asking a composer to write a concerto for her, then having to find an ensemble to perform it, and then setting up several other performances. It's been a big project, but Simona Dinnerstein has been really excited about teaming up with the Far Cry on her newest recording called Circles. It's featured this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Elmacher. Well, Simona, let's just dive right into your new project. And I'd love to know how you started your relationship with the Boston-based ensemble called A Far Cry.
That started a few years ago when they contacted me to see if I would be interested in creating a reimagining of the Goldberg Variations for piano and string orchestra. And it sounded like a really intriguing project, and I went for it, and it was really fascinating working with them and doing that. And in fact, it's something that we're going to work on again next season. But it was just so wonderful to work with them because they're very experimental and interesting, open to trying new things, and a lot of fun to be with.
Well, they're experimental enough to be inspired to be at least one of the ensembles that helped to commission this piece. Now, because I thought I saw this was sort of like a dozen different ensembles or orchestras that were working to have this Philip Glass piece commissioned?
Yes. Yeah, it was quite a big project to put together. But when I initially spoke to Philip Glass and he wanted to write this concerto, then I had to figure out who was going to be part of it and how to go about doing this. I'd never done anything like this before. And I immediately thought of A Far Cry because I thought that they would just be so interesting to discover this piece with. And so we did the world premiere and the recording, obviously, and then 11 other orchestras participated in the co-commission.
Now, what makes this ensemble the right ensemble to do this piece with by Philip Glass?
Well, I wasn't to know this before I heard the piece because I didn't know what it was going to sound like. I knew it was going to be a piece for piano and string orchestra because that's what I asked for, was that it be for piano and string orchestra and be paired with this particular Bach keyboard concerto in G minor. But beyond that, I didn't know. But as it turns out, what Glass wrote is a piece where the piano is very much part of the texture of the strings. And it requires a lot of blending of sound and balancing of voices. It's a very subtle piece of music, and it really only works if every part of the orchestra is listening and responding and balancing with each other. And so it turned out that A Far Cry was really ideal for this situation, and it was really nice to have that be the way that I first discovered the piece, being with them, because they really give a lot of time to rehearsal. Much more time than most orchestras do, and that allowed us to experiment with trying it different ways and to really get to become familiar from the inside out with the music.
Now, you mentioned that you really wanted this piece to be paired with the keyboard concerto number 7 in G minor by Bach. Why this keyboard concerto?
Well, it's an unusual concerto because though it's in a minor key, it's a very joyful piece of music, and I like that twist to it. And I think that Glass can have that in his music too. So it was my instinct that him knowing that it would be with a minor key concerto would be interesting. And I think it really did work out very effectively, having that that concerto paired with his concerto.
So I'm curious, what is it like, what does it feel like to know that someone has created a work specifically with you in mind?
Oh, it's so kind of humbling. I mean, it's really, you know, I was excited enough that he wanted to write something for me, and then I was thrilled that we were able to make it a concerto. But when I finally received this piece and played it for the first time at home, I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it was way beyond what I had imagined. And the qualities in the piece are so suited to my playing. And he told me that he had really thought of that. So it's really a huge honor, and it's a very special feeling that he wrote such an incredible piece for me.
So the Philip Glass piece has been really well received so far, and it is an incredible work. Why do you think it's so appealing?
Well, I think it's a very unusual concerto in that it's very intimate and very personal. It's lyrical. Fluid, lush. There are some very incredibly dynamic parts to it. And then it ends with the most unusual movement. The third movement is the slowest, longest movement. He dedicated it to Arvo Pärt, and you can definitely hear Pärt's influence with the sound of these drones and a very sort of spacious, still quality that permeates the whole movement. But I think it really is a completely transfixing way to end the whole piece.
Now, do you know why it's dedicated to Arvo Pärt?
I think he wrote it as a tribute to him. He really admires his music, and I think they're friends.
I know the first movement, at least to my ear, has kind of a wistful quality, yet it's very inviting. Mm. And I thought that the way that first movement is put together really draws you in.
That's a good way to put it, that it's inviting. I mean, it starts with the piano alone. And then the cellos enter, and then the bass. Of the strings, so there's this kind of sort of gradual easing in to the sound, and then the end of the movement is just the piano by itself, and there's an undulating quality that's running through the whole movement. Whole parts of it remind me of Fauré. It has that kind of quality, sort of translucent. Sunday afternoon.
Now, how do you approach the phrasing in this work?
The phrasing, a lot of that is very open-ended in the score. So much of it is what I thought the music was saying. When I played it with a Far Cry, we worked on it together to think about it. I think a lot of it is very long lines. I've now played it since the recording. I think I've performed it with maybe 7 orchestras so far. And so it continues to evolve, because each orchestra has something different that they bring to it. But the phrasing is as open as it is for Bach.
So when you say open, do you mean flexible? Like you can it can be changed based on the mood that you're feeling, or what does that mean?
I mean that it's not specified how it should be. It could go in different directions. You could take a breath in one place or another place. The peak of a phrase could be in various places, or how you bring out what you think the peak of a phrase is could change. So with concertos, it's really hard to be that spontaneous that you can just do it according to how you feel that night. I mean, I think with a Far Cry, we did manage to bring in a lot of spontaneity because everybody was such a good listener that we could respond in the moment. But most of the time when I'm playing with orchestras, we have very little rehearsal time, and it really needs to be clear what the plan is going to be. So I've generally taken certain decisions, which I tell, you know, I express to the conductor or to the orchestra.
Simona, this new recording is titled Circles, and that is the concept, and it actually kind of carries that thread through on many levels. Would you explain a little bit about your circles concept between the pieces and even in the formation in which you're performing these pieces?
Yeah, so the music itself, I think Bach's music and Glass's music is very circular. The whole notion of the patterns coming back to themselves, and in the Glass concerto, the third movement ending in this quiet, quiet place. Which is almost where the beginning of the piece started from. Is something that's interesting to me, how the music comes back on itself. And then when we recorded it, and even when we performed it, we took the lid off the piano and had it facing the orchestra, so the orchestra formed a semicircle around me, with the violins playing antiphonally on either side of me. That enabled us to really look at each other. Everybody could look at me. I could see everyone. They could see each other. And we could all hear each other very well with the piano right at the heart of it. And we formed a circle, and it was really a wonderful way of communicating with everyone.
And your back then is to the audience, is that right?
That's right, yes. So audiences are usually a little surprised by that.
Except they can probably see what you're doing maybe even a little bit better. I mean, sometimes as someone who's sitting in an audience, it's difficult to see exactly what you're doing with your hands, but perhaps, I don't know, what kind of feedback have you gotten about that?
Yeah, I think that people can see my hands, and also I think people have noticed how much your whole body is involved, like your back when you're playing. Nobody really knows that until they see you from behind. Some people have complained that they can't see my face, but I think that's a good thing because I know I make funny faces when I play, so I'm happy that they don't see it. But it's nice for me also to just be like so in the music. Like I'm literally inside the sound, you know, because it's surrounding me, and it's a great place to be. You can hear everything in a way that, you know, the typical piano concerto position is really skewed, and it's hard to hear some of the orchestra because they're farther away from me.
And this ensemble is standing as well, with the exception of the cellos and maybe the double bass.
Yes, yeah, it's wonderful. Makes them very physically involved. And they even do sometimes, they, in rehearsal, try certain physical movements together, like on purpose, which is interesting. I do think that there's a lot of connection between music and dance, and sometimes even moving your body in a way that is dance-like can make the music come out in a certain kind of way, which is more natural.
Well, and Bach certainly wrote plenty of dances.
definitely, yes.
Though I don't know, are we weren't really hearing any dances in this keyboard concerto, are we?
Oh, I think the third movement is very dance-like. I think it's really, I feel like there's a skip in that one.
So you mentioned that you've been touring the Philip Glass piece, and you've played it many times now. What have you been learning about this piece as you've grown to, I hope, I would imagine, fall in love with it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I fell in love with it from the moment I received it, but it has been really interesting playing it with the different orchestras and also with different conductors. Everybody brings something new to it. The size of the orchestras vary, even just how they play, like who I hear more, you know, which sections, things about the music that are difficult, that are consistently difficult, or things that aren't, you know, that can be surprising too. And also the scale of the piece. It's a very large piece. It's about 35 minutes and pretty much one movement leads right into the next. So it's nonstop and it's so intense. Like you have to be so focused the whole time to the very last note. Like for me, just even the way that I have to release the final chord, which is very, very quiet, and you don't want the piano to zing as you release the notes. It's just been really a very interesting experience doing it with all these different people and in different places and different acoustical spaces on different pianos.
Do you have a section within that work that you just really look forward to every time you play it?
Oh yeah, I have a few sections. There's a part in the second movement that I just think it's just so gorgeous and painful. There's a part where I play alone. And then the cellos play with me, and we're playing like a duet. After that, the whole orchestra comes in, and it's very deep and lush. And there's some wonderful dissonances in the chords, and I just love the dissonances. I just love playing that part. So I love it when the orchestra loves doing that part too, then everybody goes for it, and it's a great feeling playing it. There's a tremendously loud part in the second movement. I play it by myself, and then everybody joins in. The strings are playing together. They're playing these arpeggios together, but they sound almost like they've become a synthesizer. Like they sound like some kind of electronic organ together, not like strings anymore. And it's an amazing sound. It's almost like a rock band, or I don't know, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, that kind of sound, you know? It's great.
think this is one of those pieces, and there aren't a lot of them that I would consider being new works that just, you know, the more you listen to it, the more you discover, which I think is what classical music in itself is known for. You have to listen to it many times to hear all the nuances.
Definitely, yeah.
So what have you learned about yourself in the making of this recording? I'll focus on that since you performed this many times, unless it makes sense for me to ask you what you've learned about yourself as you've worked more with this piece of music.
I think firstly I would say that it was a huge project to put together. So I definitely learned that I could do something like that. you know, from just connecting to Philip Glass to organizing the 12 orchestras and then having it recorded. Like, that was a big thing to achieve. In terms of what I've learned about myself through the music and through the playing of it, I've been finding it very freeing playing his music. There's something about it that allows me to be much more open to the moment and to being free to being open in the moment in performance. And I feel like that is affecting how I play other music in performance. So I really feel thankful to his music for showing me that. It's just, there's something about it it works the best when it's improvisatory, when it's like happening right then, and you allow it to happen right then without too much of a plan. Even practicing it, I don't practice it very much because I want it to be fresh when I get out there. So sometimes it's even a little bit scary because I've not really practiced it, and I've never done that before. You know, I always practice a lot, so it's a new thing for me to go out on stage and not have been practicing it, and it's exciting. I kind of like it. It's sort of edgy.
Wow. So how has that newfound sense of freedom perhaps impacted the way you play the music of Bach?
Well, it's making me think that I should feel even more free with it in performance. I can't have quite the same level of not practicing because there's a certain physicality to the Bach's music that I need to have, you know, all the time. But in terms of what happens in the moment of performance and how I'm interacting with the orchestra and how I don't need to push it to go in one way or another. Like, I think I've always felt a certain sense of needing to direct the music in a certain way, and it's so interesting when you don't do that, like when it's just, it becomes more of a conversation between you and the different members of the orchestra that you're having right then and there. But that's a kind of scary thing to do, you know, so you have to feel confident that you can allow that to take place. And I've been really trying to do that, and when I succeed with doing that, it's really incredibly rewarding.
That's this week's edition of New Classical Tracks on American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julie Amacher, and this is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media.